morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today's Monday, February 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Namibians mourn the death of their president, Hage Geingob, who passed away Sunday at age 82.
The news came as a shock to many people. As you know, the president has not been sick for a long time, but things turned otherwise. He left us this morning, but the nation remains calm.
Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party on the verge of a two-thirds majority in parliament following weekend by-elections. Senegalese are digesting President Macky Sall's abrupt postponement of the February 25 presidential election.
We are all shocked. Surprised, disappointed, and really felt betrayed by the politician.
And WHO says one in six deaths globally are due to cancer-related illness. Those stories, plus our Black History Month facts and Samson O'Malley's sports at the African Cup of Nations, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The people of Namibia are mourning the death of their president, Hage Geingob, who passed away Sunday at age 82. He had been receiving treatment for cancer. The late President Geingob played a role in Namibia's fight for independence and was its first post-independence prime minister. He is also being remembered as a pan-Africanist. Peja Mushilenga is Namibia's Minister of Information and Communication Technology. He tells me the nation is shocked, but is calm and has carried out a smooth transition of power as mandated by the Constitution.
The news came as a shock to many people. As you know, the president has not been sick for a long time. It was just recently announced that the president has taken ill, and we all hope that he was going to receive treatment and recover from his illness. But things turned otherwise. He left us this morning, but the nation remains calm, and we have done the transition in terms of our constitution. Article 29, the vice president has taken over until after elections are held.
How would you describe the late president in terms of his contribution to Namibia as it is today and to Africa as a whole?
To start with, the president is a freedom fighter. He was among the first representatives of SWAPO to the United Nations. He was there as a petitioner, and he has been a director of the United Nations Institute for Namibians, which trained a number of Namibians before independence, preparing them to come and take over the administration of a new independent state. He was the chairman of the Constituent Assembly that drafted the Namibian Constitution, and he was the first prime minister. In all those roles, he has contributed enormously to the current state where Namibia finds itself. He contributed to the independence, he contributed to nation building and economic development. So that was the man that we are now mourning today. And talking about Africa, he was a pan-Africanist. He has served as a member of the Committee of 10 for the African states regarding the reforms of the United Nations. He participated in African Union summits as well as regional summits in the Southern Africa region. He has created a very good network with other African heads of states. He is a respected African statesman.
Thank you so much, sir. And please, we are sorry for the passing of your president.
You're welcome.
Peja Mushilenga is the Namibia's Minister of Information and Communication Technology. He was speaking with us from the capital, Windhoek. Senegalese are still digesting the weekend bombshell dropped by President Macky Sall when he abruptly postponed the February 25, 2024 presidential election. According to the French news agency, AFP, the president cited controversies over the disqualification of some candidates and corruption in election-related cases. Some political parties attempted to begin campaigning on Sunday, but security forces prevented them from doing so. The Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, has called for dialogue. Senegalese political analyst Ibrahima Kan says Senegalese are shocked, surprised, and feeling betrayed. He tells me there is no legally justified emergency in the country to warrant the postponement.
We are all shocked. Shocked, surprised, disappointed, and really felt betrayed by the politician. You know, when you look at what was done today, the first question in mind is, what are the reasons invoked to decide not to organize the election?
So that's what I want to ask you, because the president said in his announcement that he was doing so because of the controversy about the disqualification of some candidates. I'm wondering, what controversy is he referring to?
There is no controversy. In fact, there is one candidate, Abdoulaye Wade's son, who had dual nationality, and the constitution said for the president of the Republic of Senegal, he should only have one nationality, which is the Senegalese one. 2 weeks before the examination of your candidature, you write a letter to the constitutional court and said that you have only the Senegalese nationality, and that you have not been sentenced to by prison and so and so. And you make, it's under oath that you make those statements. He did it, but the time he was doing it, his French nationality was not yet removed by the French authorities. And based on that, the Constitutional Court decided that he cannot run for the presidency. According to our own constitution, nobody can overrule a decision of the Constitutional Court.
So what is the legal basis for that, the announcement that the president made?
There is an Article 52 of the Constitution which say when the institution is in total crisis, due, for example, to external invasion or to, you know, a very serious political crisis, the president can consult with the Speaker of the Parliament and the chair of many institutions that were created and then make a statement to the nation. But we are not in that particular context. There is no crisis in the country. Everything was working perfectly. Can we now accept that when they have their own problem, they can interpret the provision of the Constitution and to make this kind of decision? That's the question that people are asking here in Senegal. Because by the 3rd of April, the president has to hand over the power.
Given what's happening in the sub-region, Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, is President Macky Sall setting up a situation where Senegal can be in a confused situation also?
Definitely, yes. But, you know, before even we go through those kind of issues, what response now ECOWAS can give to the leaders of Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger about term elongation or unconstitutional change of government? What are they going to say? Even the civilians that are in power are also manipulating the constitution. That's what is transpiring now, because now it's not only military who are taking over, it's also civilians who are manipulating constitution to remain in power. Because at the end of the day, even if he reiterated his commitment not to run for the presidency, he's still in power, and for how long, nobody knows.
Ibrahima Kan is a Senegalese political analyst. He was speaking with us from the capital, Dakar. Zimbabwe remains in election mode following political developments that have led to recalls and the resignation of opposition elected members. The latest is a by-election held on Saturday seeking to fill vacant seats which previously belonged to the main opposition Citizens Coalition for Change. Reporter Kuzai Zilambashe in Harare has the details.
Blessing Makwara is with the non-profit called Elections Resource Center, or ERC, an elections watchdog organization.
On 3 February, there were by-elections that were held in 6 constituencies. Vacancies arose due to the recalls that happened within the CCC political party, and that necessitated the by-election to be held. As ERC observed these by-elections, we deployed observers within the 6 constituencies. In all these 6 constituencies, they were previously won by the United CCC, but due to what we all have been observing, The six constituencies all have this time been won by ZANU-PF. So ZANU-PF is the biggest winner in these elections, having won all the six by-elections.
Makwara says they noted a slight increase in voter turnout compared to the previous December by-elections. The recalls that necessitated the by-elections were initiated by Sengenzo Shabangu, an individual who claims to be the Secretary General of the opposition party, but the party leadership denied he was Secretary General. The recalled candidates were barred from seeking re-election by the courts at Chawangu's instigation. The by-elections over the weekend were mainly a contest between Chawangu's preferred candidates and the ruling ZANU-PF. Political analyst Vivid Gwede says the results are very telling.
This development simply shows how the democratic space in Zimbabwe has shrunk, given that the opposition, the main opposition, did not manage to contest in these elections. The development is also a foreseeable conclusion to what many observers have described as ZANU-PF's unfair attempt to regain two-thirds majority in parliament.
Farai Marapira is the director of information with the ruling ZANU-PF. He denies the allegations that ZANU-PF is behind the recalls and opposition infighting.
When we went for the August 2023 general elections, the ZANU-PF, we did not expect any other elections except the ones that would be coming on in 2028. What has been happening is the result of fighting between different factions within the opposition, and this is born and bred by their own decisions as leaders in the opposition as they have been dealing with one another. The bane of egocentrism and the bane of selfishness is the result of this demise in the opposition, not ZANU-PF.
Blessing Makwara says this is not the end of by-elections. The leader of the main opposition party, Nelson Chamisa, recently announced he was leaving the opposition after a series of recalls by Sengenzo Chabangu. Chamisa's exit has seen some of the elected members loyal to him announcing their resignation from parliament. Critics fear the newly consolidated two-thirds majority by ZANU-PF may be the beginning of repressive and controversial laws in Zimbabwe and could allow the ruling party to remove the constitutional provision that permits a president to serve only two terms. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinavashe from Harare, Zimbabwe.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, February 5th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley's Pause. Yesterday, Sunday, was World Cancer Day, and the World Health Organization says at least 1 in 9 men and 1 in 12 women die globally from the disease. The WHO says the global cancer burden is growing amid a mounting need for services. In Africa, cancer accounts for nearly 1 in 6 deaths, with cervical, breast, liver, prostate, and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma being the most common. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
Over 35 million new cancer cases are predicted in 2050, a 77% increase from the estimated 20 million cases in 2022. A new World Health Organization report attributes the rapid growing global burden on aging population growth, as well as the changes to people's exposure to risk factors associated with socioeconomic development. Tobacco and alcohol use, infections, UV exposure, and obesity are key reasons behind the increasing incidence of cancer. WHO Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus says to fight inequality in treatment of the disease, countries need to invest in access to cancer services, prevention, screening, and treatment.
At some point in our lives, cancer affects all of us. New estimates show that about 1 in 5 people globally will develop cancer. Lower-income countries are seeing the fastest growth of cancer. Globally, two-thirds of countries do not include affordable access to priority cancer services in their health benefit package. WHO is working to improve the situation.
In Africa, the cancer situation is devastating, with 50% of new cases in the region affecting breast, cervix, prostate, colon, rectum and liver. Breast cancer kills more women in the region than any other form of cancer. The regional director for WHO, Mashidiso Moyat, said in a statement, and I quote, "On the 4th of February every year, the world unites to raise awareness for fundamental cancer issues. We at WHO African Region connect with the public in spearheading this annual awareness day and beyond." Many cancer patients in Africa are diagnosed with advanced cases and do not complete their care. With the high cost of treatment being the main reason, most patients must pay out of pocket for care. WHO, in collaboration with partners under the initiative The Rays of Hope, is helping to increase access to life-saving radiotherapy and diagnostic imaging services used in cancer care, focusing on low and middle-income countries.
2 years ago, WHO and the International Atomic Energy Agency joined forces for the Rays of Hope initiative to address long-standing inequities in radiotherapy. Of the 12 million people diagnosed with cancer in low- and middle-income countries, only half have access to radiotherapy.
Already, some countries like Benin, Chad, Democratic Republic of Congo, Kenya, Malawi, Niger, and Senegal have received a range of key radiotherapy and medical imaging machines to help in delivering treatment in those countries.
This World Cancer Day, WHO remains committed to supporting every country to prevent, detect, and treat cancer for all people.
The World Health Organization estimates that by 2050, cancer cases are projected to be 77% higher than they were in 2022. Globally, lung cancer was the most commonly occurring form, with 2.5 million new cases accounting for 12.4% of total new cases. Other major cancers were female breast cancer, colorectal cancer, prostate cancer, and stomach cancer. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in San Francisco.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abidjan, Ivory Coast, at the Africa Cup of Nations. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. The CAF Africa Cup of Nations Cote d'Ivoire 2023 is in the final week, as Nigeria, DR Congo, Cote d'Ivoire and South Africa have emerged as the four semi-finalists in the 34th edition of the continent's premier sporting event. We preview the four finalists and we begin with Nigeria. The Super Eagles stand as the most experienced team at this stage, making their 16th appearance in the CAF AFCON semi-final. Nigeria aim for one thing, securing a spot in the final. And despite entering the tournament as favorites, Nigeria faced challenges, notably with a drawn match against Equatorial Guinea. While the focus was on their attacking prowess, the defense proved resilient, conceding only one goal. Super Eagles vice-captain William Ekong reacts to their being in the last four.
We're very satisfied with qualifying now for the semi-final. I think the game wasn't as pretty as we wanted it to be, but the underlying situation is that we qualified for the semi-final. That's what we wanted to do. You know, at this stage of the tournament, it doesn't really matter how you play as long as you win the games.
For DR Congo, anticipation met reality as the country secured its first victory in the CAF Africa Cup of Nations, Ivory Coast 2023. Facing Guinea in the quarterfinals, the Leopards displayed strength, overcoming an early goal by the Sale National to win 3-1. This victory marks the fifth time in the history of DR Congo that they have reached the semifinals of the Cup of Nations. When DR Congo won the Cup of Nations in 1968 and 1974, they eliminated the host country in the semifinals. In 1968, they beat Ethiopia 2-3 after extra time, and in 1974, Egypt fell by the same scoreline. And talking about the host, Cote d'Ivoire, they are in their ninth semi-final appearance. Facing DR Congo will set the stage for a rematch of the 2015 semi-final, where the Elephants emerged victorious with a 3-1 scoreline in Bata, Equatorial Guinea. The fourth team to make its way into the semi-final is Bafana Bafana of South Africa. They return to the pinnacle, ending a 24-year absence from the Cup of Nations semi-finals. The South Africans impressed, eliminating Morocco, a World Cup semi-finalist, and then adding Cape Verde, previously unbeaten. Their journey continues in the semi-finals, where they face a similar foe in the Super Eagles of Nigeria. Hugo Bruce is the South African coach.
I think we played the worst game of the tournament, of all our games. We played better against Mali. We played better against Namibia, Tunisia, also Morocco. And today, yeah, this was not the team we saw in the previous weeks. And I think for some players, it's a very new experience. And that maybe the pressure and the nerves.
And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abidjan, Cote d'Ivoire. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a very good Monday. It is time now for our Black History Month and African History presentation for today, February 5th. This morning, instead of our usual daily facts, we want to remember civil rights activist and longtime radio host Joe Madison, who died February 2nd, 2024, at age 74. The late Madison used his program to shine a light on many issues, including the Sudanese genocide in the early 2000s. Here to share his memory of the late Madison is Melvin Foote, founder and president of the Constituency for Africa.
When I came to Washington in 84, he was one of the people who stood out here in Washington on the issues of civil rights and human rights. I had just come out of Somalia and been in Ethiopia, and he was really intrigued by that. So that's how we met. But I saw him at all the marches, all of the protests that went on. He was always among the front line people. And so he was known as a community leader.
When it comes to Africa also, I was reading about him and his involvement with the Sudanese genocide issue.
I had just been in Sudan around the same time, but this was around 2001, and I went there on a mission to persuade the Sudan government to end the war with the South and, you know, seek some sort of reconciliation. I came back and I met with Colin Powell, who was then Secretary of State, and I conveyed the message. I was kind of playing like a shadow diplomacy. But then Joe came along. He was with Walter Fauntleroy and some other folks, and they went to the South because there were rumors that the South Sudanese were being used as slaves, and Joe and Walter, you know, they were pushing that argument that there's slavery in South Sudan. And of course, when you mention slavery to Black Americans, our antenna go up.
Joe Madison at some point went on a hunger strike to encourage the passing of the voting rights legislation. What can you share with us on that?
Well, I would say that Joe was involved in all the issues. He was a journalist first and foremost, but he was also not just about talking, because he used to always say that all we're hearing is lip service. People are talking about this problem. People are talking about that problem. But what are you doing about the problem? You know, he saw AfriCare as an organization that was actually building wells and health clinics. And, you know, okay, we're talking about poverty in Africa, but Africa is actually building dams and irrigation systems and vegetable gardens. And he was always advocating that we got to go beyond the talk and we got to actually do things pragmatically. I fully supported him on that. And I thought that his voice was important, because a lot of people, when they thought about Africa, thought it as an esoteric kind of a thing. And it was more than that. You got human beings there who have real needs, and the needs of food and water and shelter and so forth. And Joe came down on the side of, we got to do something about it, not just talk about it.
Melvin Foote is the founder and president of the Constituency for Africa. Yeah, Tracy, go to the close. And that's it for this Monday, February 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.